KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 8 o'clock, it's cloudy. A few snow flurries in the air. It's 18 degrees. We look for skies to be cloudy to partly cloudy today. The snow will be ending this morning, and we'll have a high around 25. Good morning. I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News, brought to you by ASI, Audiology and Hearing Instruments in Atlantic. Well, as the snow tapers off here in southwest Iowa, the roadways still remain quite slick. Latest DOT's traveler information report at 511IA.org shows all the roads in western and southwest Iowa are partially or mostly covered with snow, and towing services are prohibited. So if you happen to spin off and go into the ditch, it'll be quite a while before your vehicle gets towed out until the road conditions begin to improve. No reports of any serious accidents so far that we've heard of here this morning. Traffic is a little slow, as you might expect, along the I-29 corridor over in Council Bluffs. I-29 northbound traffic between exits Highway 92 and exit and Interstate 80. Traffic is slow there this morning, that last report just before 8 a.m. In weather-related news, keeping the Des Moines International Airport open during a winter storm requires long days and teamwork. Airport worker Jim Smith told the Des Moines Register on Thursday that he'd been clearing the tarmac at the airport for 19 years. The 55-year-old said that once he knows there's a big snowstorm on the way, long days are ahead, and he said they work until the snow is removed and clear and try to keep the airport open, but teamwork is a must. Smith says communication between people driving big snow brooms and snow plows is very important because the conditions, the wind, the whiteout, can get snow blinded out there. He says you also have to know where you're at all times, be careful, and know where everyone else is. The same thing can apply when you're on the road, traveling to wherever you need to go today. I'll have more news in just a moment.
Your spouse is frustrated, and you're not sure what you've done to warrant the cold shoulder and snippy retorts. At work, it seems like everyone else has a handle on the new project and is forging ahead, but you're struggling because you didn't quite catch the details on what you're supposed to do. Or maybe you feel left out when everyone in your coffee group laughs at the same time, but you don't get it. Did you miss something? This is Doug Leonard, audiologist at ASI. I hear these stories as patients finally come to the realization that they're missing out. The unfortunate part of the story is that I said finally. For whatever reason, many people believe that their difficulty isn't that big of a deal, or it's because of the actions of others. They mumble, they don't look at me when they speak, or any of a number of other excuses. But what they don't realize is that it's their hearing that's the problem. The sooner they take action to correct it, the shorter the rehab process will be, and the sooner their frustrations will fade. It starts with a simple evaluation. Call ASI today, with offices in Atlantic, Audubon, Manning, and Carroll.
We have one road report to tell you about of note. The Iowa DOT just reports that Interstate 80 eastbound between exit 76 and exit 83, that is County Road N54 and Antique Country Drive near Adair, the right lane is blocked there because of a disabled vehicle. Again, the right lane near Adair on I-80 eastbound is currently blocked, so consider that if you're traveling this morning. A federal judge has refused to reinstate a verdict favoring the city of Council Bluffs and two former police detectives sued in a wrongful conviction lawsuit that ended at a mistrial. Terry Harrington and Curtis McGee, both of Omaha, had sued Council Bluffs and the retired officers back in 2005, claiming the officers coerced witnesses and hid evidence during their 1978 murder trials. Harrington and McGee went to prison but were released in 2003 after courts found their constitutional rights were violated. A jury returned December 14th with a verdict favoring the city and officers, but three jurors indicated they didn't agree with it. Judge Robert Pratt then declared a mistrial because the verdict was not unanimous. Attorneys for the city of Council Bluffs and officers asked Pratt to reinstate the verdict, but in a ruling this week, he declined to do so. Three Harlan residents were arrested on February 15th in connection with a burglary that occurred on February 3rd, as well as drug-related charges. That followed the execution of a search warrant at 301 Hill Street in Harlan. The Shelby County Sheriff's Office said Thursday 39-year-old Chad Darrow, 41-year-old Michael Arnold, and 31-year-old Nicole Anderson, all of Harlan, were taken into custody after deputies recovered several pieces of evidence believed to be narcotics-related. Darrow faces varying degrees of misdemeanor charges that include possession of burglary tools, possession of drug paraphernalia, possession of a controlled substance, methamphetamine, and a felony charge of burglary in the third degree. He was being held in the Shelby County Jail on $5,000 bond and is scheduled to make his initial court appearance on Tuesday of next week. Arnold, meanwhile, faces a felony charge of burglary in the third degree. He was released from custody on Thursday on a $5,000 bond. Anderson was released on Tuesday on a $2,000 bond. She faces varying degrees of misdemeanor charges, including possession of a controlled substance, methamphetamine, possession of drug paraphernalia, and unlawful possession of prescription drugs. Anderson made her initial appearance in court Thursday morning. The Atlantic Police Department said yesterday that they arrested 35-year-old Robert Atkinson of Atlantic on Wednesday. He was taken into custody on a charge of theft in the fifth degree, or shoplifting, associated with the alleged theft of clothing from a local hardware store, and on an Adair County warrant for forgery. Atkinson was booked into the Cass County Jail and held pending a court appearance. The Mills County Sheriff's Office reported yesterday the arrest on Tuesday of a Malvern man. 18-year-old Dylan Lee Kahn was arrested Tuesday night on a warrant for failure to appear on a possession of controlled substance charge, for which there was no bond. He faces additional charges of possession of controlled substance and possession of drug paraphernalia. Bond on those charges was set at $2,300. Also arrested Tuesday in Mills County was 33-year-old James Burson of Council Bluffs. He was taken into custody at the Pottawatomie County Jail on a warrant for allegedly violating his probation, and bond was set at $10,000. And the Mills County deputies arrested Wednesday 41-year-old Daryl Eugene Bredberg of Emerson. Bredberg was wanted on a warrant for theft in the second degree. His bond was set at $5,000. That same day, 38-year-old Preston Wayne Mathis of Glenwood was arrested for a display of weapon and assault at the Mills County Sheriff's Office. His bond was set at $2,000. Montgomery County Emergency Management Coordinator Brian Hammond reports the Midwest Regional Dive Team recently received a donation from the family of a man whose body they recovered last summer from a lake in Nebraska. Members of the Michael Hartsook family presented the team with a check for $2,500 on Sunday, January 27th. The team also received a plaque showing the family's appreciation for the support and closure they received on July the 3rd of last year at Hanson Lake No. 3 in Sarpy County, Nebraska. Members of the Midwest Regional Dive Team were requested by the Sarpy County Sheriff's Office for a dive recovery for a possible drowning victim from July 1, 2012 that hadn't been located by other local dive teams and was still missing at the time. The dive team responded on July the 3rd and battled 100-degree weather for nearly 10 hours. A systematic grid search was done, and after 96,000 square feet was searched, the body of Michael Hartsook was recovered. Cass County Sheriff's Deputy Ben Bartholomew has been a member of the dive team for 3 years. He told KJAN News their training really pays off in preparing them for the variable conditions they face when they're searching for a possible drowning victim.
When you're training and doing a dive, you're generally in little to zero visibility water and generally fairly cold water, because at the depths we go, the water temperature can be in the high 30s or low 40s.
Even though the family was met with the members of the dive team 6 months after the tragedy, it did bring them one step closer to closure, as it was Michael's birthday and they wanted to share it with those that were able to recover him from the lake on that day. The dive team helped to recover 3 drowning victims in July of 2012. On July the 4th, they located the body of a 31-year-old Lewis woman who drowned while swimming at the Nishnabotna River in the Rock Cuts area of the Cold Springs State Park near Lewis. And on July the 24th, they helped to search for the body of a 25-year-old man who died after jumping in to save a girl at Lake Red Rock near Pella. Bartholomew says efforts to recover victims can wear emotionally on the all-volunteer team.
Everything is volunteers, so it gets to be, can be taxing, especially at the first two incidents were 2 days in a row. We had a recovery on the July 3rd and then turned around and had another recovery on July 4th in Cass County. So it can be fairly taxing on all the volunteers that take part of it, but it can be rewarding as well. Never going to be a good situation when a family member is missing or drowned, but it creates a lot of closure for the family to have the body recovered as soon as possible so they can move on with whatever plans they need as far as funeral arrangements and moving on with their lives. It helps create the closure for them. That's why we all do it, I guess. Once in a while, it's nice to know that the families are appreciating what we're doing, and because that's what we're doing it for.
The Midwest Regional Dive Team consists of divers and support staff ranging in age from their early 20s to mid-50s. Some of the older members have decades worth of diving experience. They come from the Red Oak Fire Department, Clarinda Fire Department, Ringgold County Water Emergency Team, the Adams County EMS, and Cass County, Iowa Sheriff's Office. The dive team responds to any requests within a 200-mile radius of Clarinda. And in 2012, they responded to a total of 4 dive recoveries in Iowa and Nebraska. Taking a look at world headlines at this hour, weather forecasters are warning of slick roads and reduced visibility as gusty winds are expected to kick up snow that fell overnight in southern Wisconsin. The same is expected in northeastern Iowa and in Chicago. A major snowstorm that shuttered airports in Missouri and buried parts of Kansas has crawled northeastward, and it's left at least two people dead. Two people are dead after the crash of a medical helicopter early today in Oklahoma City. Authorities tell the Oklahoman newspaper the chopper went down near a nursing home. Forecasters say the skies were clear and temperatures were around 20 degrees at the time of the crash. Japan's new prime minister is in Washington today for a visit at a time of high tension stoked by a Japan-China territorial dispute and a North Korean nuclear test. President Obama will host Shinzo Abe at the White House to reinforce a core U.S. alliance. Abe advocates for stronger ties with Washington. And President Obama is promising a big push for his proposal to provide pre-K for all four-year-olds. Obama says having a world's best education system will create jobs and boost the middle class, but it starts with early childhood education. In an interview with radio host Yolanda Adams, Obama said studies show that pre-kindergarten kids do better in school, are less likely to become teen parents, and are more likely to attend college, have a job, and form stable families. News time is 8:11.
Your spouse is frustrated, and you're not sure what you've done to warrant the cold shoulder and snippy retorts. At work, it seems like everyone else has a handle on the new project and is forging ahead, but you're struggling because you didn't quite catch the details on what you're supposed to do. Or maybe you feel left out when everyone in your coffee group laughs at the same time, but you don't get it. Did you miss something? This is Doug Leonard, audiologist at ASI. I hear these stories as patients finally come to the realization that they're missing out. The unfortunate part of the story is that I said finally. For whatever reason, many people believe that their difficulty isn't that big of a deal, or it's because of the actions of others. They mumble, they don't look at me when they speak, or any of a number of other excuses. But what they don't realize is that it's their hearing that's the problem. The sooner they take action to correct it, the shorter the rehab process will be, and the sooner their frustrations will fade. It starts with a simple evaluation. Call ASI today, with offices in Atlantic, Audubon, Manning, and Carroll.
In the funeral announcements, Lois Field, age 94 of Harlan, died February 6th at the Elmcrest Retirement Community. A funeral service for Lois Field will be held tomorrow at 11 o'clock at the Community of Christ Church in Woodbine. Paulie Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Kristen Judkins, age 34 of Lincoln, Nebraska, died Tuesday. Funeral services for Kristen Judkins will be on Saturday at 1 o'clock at the Oakland United Methodist Church. Reagan Beath Funeral Home in Oakland has arrangements. Betty Jane Shepherd, age 87, of Royal Stewart, died Saturday. A memorial service for Betty Jane Shepherd will be tomorrow at 1:30 at the Stewart Mount Vernon United Methodist Church. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart has the arrangements. Dennis Coles, age 82, of Erling, died Monday at Murtu Medical Center in Harlan. A massive Christian burial service for Dennis Coles will be tomorrow at 2 o'clock at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Erling. Paulie Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Leo Armstrong, age 77, of Fontenelle, died February 15th at his home in Fontenelle. And per his wishes, his body was cremated and no services will be held for Leo Armstrong. But a gathering of remembrance will be held at the United Methodist Church in Fontenelle on Sunday from 1 until 4. Steen Funeral Home in Fontenelle has the arrangements. Ray Schaefer, age 93, of Cannon City, Colorado, died Sunday at his home. Graveside services for Ray Schaefer will be on Monday at 11 o'clock. At the Dexter City Cemetery, a Johnson Family Funeral Home in Dexter has arrangements. Eva Mae Hansen, age 71, of Avoca, died Thursday at Avoca Nursing and Rehab. Funeral services for Eva Hansen will be on Monday at 1 o'clock at the Paulie Jones Funeral Home in Harlan. Francis McClure, age 81, of Stewart, died Wednesday at the Guthrie County Hospital. Memorial services for Francis McClure will be Tuesday at 11 a.m. at the First Congregational Church in Stewart. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart has arrangements. Alexander Alex Adam Yeager, age 17, died Thursday. Services for Alex Yeager are pending at the Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic. Elaine Haynes, age 91, of Oakland, died Thursday at the Oakland Manor. Funeral services for Elaine Haynes are pending at the Reagan Veith Funeral Home in Oakland. Norman Henriksen, age 86, of Atlantic, died Thursday at the Heritage House. Services for Norman Henriksen are pending at Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic. And Craig Cullen, age 53, of Greenfield, died Wednesday at Iowa Methodist in Des Moines. Funeral services for Craig Cullen are pending at the Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield. The news was brought to you by ASI, Audiology and Hearing Instruments, at 601 Poplar in Atlantic. Call 243-5796. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.